Good to go? Okay. Welcome to our work session for the Board of the County Commissioners. Today we have a budget and annual report presentation from the Children's Justice Center, and we will go ahead and turn the time over to Rebecca Martell.
Hey, thank you so much, Commissioners, for having me here today. I always love to share what we do at the Children's Justice Center. It's amazing work, and we appreciate your guys' support. So today we're going to look at kind of just our overall department overview. We're going to look at what we've done 2020 year to date, some challenges that we've had in 2020, and despite those challenges, some successes we've been able to have. And then looking at our 2021 projections and funding breakdown, our requests, and then of course feedback that we've gotten from parents and from children in the community. Okay. So I'm sure as you guys are aware, but just to cover the basis, so we are set up on state statute, which is referred here at the bottom of the slide, and we're set up under Utah state statute to provide comprehensive and effective multidisciplinary response to child sexual abuse, serious physical abuse in a neutral child-focused setting that minimizes trauma for the child. And as we take a look at our county compared to other counties, you can see that we're, of course, as you guys know, the second largest county, and that we've had a tremendous amount of growth in the last 10 years in our population. But I think probably for us, the most specific stat is looking at how many children we have in our community. So we do lead the state in percentage of kids who are 18 and under at 32%. One thing that's really cool is that statewide, we have, you know, amazing relationships with other directors at Children's Justice Centers. We now, as of this year, have every single county in Utah covered by a Children's Justice Center. But, you know, I have to kind of toot our own horn here a little bit that our center has the most services than any other center in the state of Utah, meaning we have more programs. So let's take a look at what that looks like for us. And just this year, we were able to restructure our center and organize it more into teams. So on the far left, you see we have our clinical supervisor that's over our interview team and what that's comprised of as far as our staff. We have a treatment supervisor, medical supervisor, and then, of course, we have our new associate director, Heather Allen, who's with us here today, and she is over our satellite office that's now located in American Fork as of June of this year. And then we also, of course, have our administrative associates. Okay, so we wanted to give you a brief overview of what each of these teams does for the community. So our clinical team really...
So just one question, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Because unless you can tell me... Oh, I do see that you're going to break this down later. So you can always punt it if you have it somewhere in the presentation. But I think when you're showing your headcount, just if... a summary of how many of those are paid for by the county versus other funding sources.
Okay.
And it may not be... It may not be that you can break it down like that. It's just a total of your budget comes from funding sources. But are there specific heads that are tied to non-county funds?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't have that included in this presentation, but okay. I have a spreadsheet that I'm happy to send you that gives a breakdown of all of our funding sources and what percentage of everyone's time is spent kind of in those different funding sources.
Got it. Okay.
So our clinical team is really what we refer to as our interview team. So as you guys know, when there's been disclosure of abuse in the community, and law enforcement and DCFS bring the child to our center to be interviewed, these are like our first responders. So they will sit down with the families. They will give them crisis information, resources. This also includes our forensic interviewers who trains law enforcement and caseworkers in the community how to interview children. And they also conduct the interviews themselves at times. And then we have our victim assistance coordinators that really does a fantastic job engaging our community by recruiting and training volunteers. And we'll kind of look at that cost savings to us later on in the presentation. They're also the ones who are tracking our cases through the criminal justice system and who are really striving to do community outreach. And all of these services are available in English and Spanish. And that's just as of this year, actually, that all services are in Spanish too. Our treatment team, of course, consists of therapists. So we do provide group therapy and individual therapy. And these are to, you know, families in the community who can't afford to pay for therapy themselves. Either their deductible is too high, so we're kind of like a last resource for those families. We utilize MSW interns to provide therapy as well. So again, we're engaging with our local universities to provide that support. And then we also have family service providers that are over our Family Justice Center, which is on Tuesday nights at the Health and Justice Building. And that's like a one-stop clinic for any kind of resource you can think of. We partner with the Timpanogos Legal Center, who provides free legal advice related to family law issues, so custody, divorce, that kind of thing. We have the food and housing help there, victim advocates, and many other resources. Sometimes immigration once a month. So that's a service we're really proud of. We want to try and remove barriers for victims accessing services. So we kind of bring all of those resources to one center for them. And then the last and very vital role that we have on our treatment team is our CPM managers. So that's our care process model. And they are the ones who administer trauma and suicide risk assessments to the kids who come through our center. And we'll talk a little more about that later. Unfortunately, some of the data we found there. Any questions on the treatment team or interview team?
No.
Okay, our medical team. We have four part-time nurse practitioners on staff. And they do both sexual and physical abuse exams. They have received extensive training from Safe and Healthy Families, Primary Children's, to be able to conduct these exams. So these are exams that, that pediatricians in our community wouldn't know how to collect evidence in these kind of cases. So they're very specifically trained. And we've worked really hard the last few years to actually partner with all the hospitals in Utah County so that we can have 24-hour response at every hospital in the community. So, any questions with our medical team?
No.
Okay, and now our North County Center, which is basically like all of those teams just kind of condensed into our North County location. So we have those, you know, clinical coordinators working with the families. We have a family service provider who's providing therapy, a nurse practitioner. And then we're going to be relocating one of our forensic interview specialists and then another clinical coordinator to, again, implement those suicide screenings, trauma screenings in North County. Okay, and then our administrative team, course, as we all know, is those vital roles in the office that we just cannot do without. That do everything from, you know, scheduling those interview appointments, time entry, data entry, and then when law enforcement or let's say the county attorney's office request transcripts of the interview, they'll type those up for them. So they definitely a vital part of our team. Okay. On to our funding breakdown for this year. You guys should have all receive this in our budget packet, but just wanted to kind of highlight how diversified our funding is. And that's another kind of gold star that we get in Utah, is that our Children's Justice Center has the most diversified funding than any other Children's Justice Center in the state. So every other funding source that we can find, we go after. And really that's to, you know, provide the county with, you know, really those like cost savings, you know, so that your dollars that you guys invest in the Children's Justice Center goes further. Okay, so our 2020 goals, these are the goals that we had presented for our metrics this year, things that we were gonna try to work on. One was, we had identified, you know, that there were children in North County that we didn't feel like that were being underserved because of travel to get to the center in Provo, like some of those families out in Eagle Mountain where it takes them an hour to get to Provo. That's why we really wanted a satellite office in American Fork right off of Pioneer and I-15, because it was, you know, a good way to access those families. And also to increase the percentage of services that we're providing, increase our funding, of course, from other multiple sources, and then increasing the number of trauma screenings, trauma and suicide screenings we were doing, and then tracking our cases through the criminal justice system. So let me tell you guys how we did on each of those. Reducing the number of underserved child victims. Now, again, we've only been open since June. The plan was originally that we would open a lot earlier, but as you guys know, we had some things that came up this year. So this is the data that we've been able to get so far. So before we opened the center from January to May, when we talked to law enforcement and found out how many cases, and again, these are cases that are involving a child. So these may not necessarily all be cases that would be coming to our center, but we can't like kind of go through and handpick all of that data. So these are cases, so you can see in kind of the white, cases that have been reported to law enforcement in those cities involving a child. And then in the red is cases that we've seen them bringing to our center. So our goal, right, is to increase the number of cases they're bringing to the center by removing some of those barriers, like distance. And since June to August, we have seen an upward trend in number of cases that have been coming to us. So, oh, is that to October? Okay, I'm sorry. So this is June to October instead of June to August. So we've increased by 5%. We're hoping to continue to increase that number.
So can I ask you a question on that? So yeah. All cases, so what does that mean specifically? There might be cases that do not need an interview then? It's just something that happened, but it doesn't rise to the level of coming to your center?
So it depends. Okay, so those cases could mean that there was domestic violence in the presence of a child, where they don't really feel like they have enough evidence, where they don't need to interview the child maybe, or they might interview them on scene, unfortunately, rather than bring them to a center. It just depends on who's on patrol, okay. Right? It could also mean where the parent or the caregiver is the offender. And in those cases, we don't have them come to the Children's Justice Center because we're worried more about safety than about getting them into a comfortable environment to talk about it at first, you know? So that could mean that they're removing the children from the home, and we wouldn't be involved in cases like that. So cases more like neglect.
Yeah.
But if we have a supportive caregiver, we want them to come to our center.
Okay.
Okay, so increasing the amount of services reported to reported child victims, And just so you can kind of see what that looks like. So we did put up our stats from 2019 and then what we've done year to date for 2020. I would say, you know, we'll get into some of the challenges that have affected some of these stats. One thing in particular, the support groups. So you can see last year we had like over 6,000 service support groups we were able to provide. Because of COVID, we had to completely shut those down for quite a few months. We have now opened those back up, but, you know, so, I mean, some of these things are explained through that, but we did remain open the whole time during COVID. And so I think, you know, we were on track to meet or exceed all of last year, except for in that support group area. Anything else, Heather, you want to add about that?
That most of these numbers were probably affected by COVID as well.
Yeah.
And we don't have the rest of the year. This is just this year through October, of course, and so the comparison is also a little tricky in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess directionally, what are you seeing? I mean, you're still brand new up there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the numbers, it looks like Lehigh is really the only, I mean, I guess it's not true. You kind of see... You know, the bar chart almost helps you see not the percentage, but the total number.
Mm-hmm.
And the total number of cases that are interviewed have gone up in Lehigh
mm-hmm.
in a real way.
Yeah.
And I guess a little bit in Saratoga and Pleasant Grove. You know, American Fork is actually down.
Yes.
Although this is a smaller time frame on the right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fewer months on the right than it is on the left, so it's not. So, I mean, I don't know how meaningful some of this data is, but are you feeling that the law enforcement and the community up north, that this is having an impact and you are going to be able to keep interviewing a higher percentage?
Yeah, I don't know if you know.
And I apologize. This was through August. I was thinking of some other data that we pulled. So it is just 3 months of data. So we are looking to increase the number of cases that we're getting from, you know, these jurisdictions. And so part of that is our community outreach and making sure that we are developing the relationship with these jurisdictions to try to work more closely with them and make sure that they're using our resources. And there are some changes that we'll be talking about shortly that will be affecting these numbers as well. And I imagine that these numbers will be increasing because of our relationship that we'll have with our law enforcement. So, and we'll talk about that as we talk about some statute changes that have affected law enforcement and the CJC. Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would say, but overall, like, I really do feel like the community is very supportive. The mayor of American Fork has been very supportive of us, the Chamber of Commerce, and law enforcement has, I mean, told us that they're excited to have that location. But again, I think there's just a lot of factors at play here. I know that law enforcement has been extremely overwhelmed with domestic violence cases and things like that that are kind of pulling them away also from these type of cases. It is hard to kind of gauge, but anecdotally, you know, what we've heard from them is they are very supportive.
So on your outcomes, a couple of anomalies on there, the emergency financial assistant, obviously you're a higher,
mm-hmm. Right.
Which tells a story, you know, it tells a story of what is going on in the community as well. And then also you talked a little bit about your support groups, you know, and what that means. But the CPM, the initial and plus the follow-up also, it looks like they're significantly up as well. So it does tell a story, the rest of them. Although, you know, you don't really want these numbers to track and get higher. You want them to go lower. I mean, that's always the goal, right? But
right.
It does look like it does tell a story on what's going on in the community so far this year, with the rest of them looking like they're going to probably be close to that, unfortunately. But that's kind of the nature of it.
Right, right. And, you know, and our goal, yes, is not to have more child victims
right.
in our community, but to have it reported more than it is, so that those children and families can get access to these services.
Right.
Okay. So, increasing our funding. You guys already know, I've already spoken with you about, you know, that we were able to secure the $300,000 in state funding, and that that funding was, yeah, retracted. But even though that was retracted, we always try and get very creative with where we can find funding. So we were able to secure some CARES funding through CCJJ for a 2-year period, and that's to hire staff at $150,000 per year. So that will actually pay for that trauma and suicide screener person who will be located in American Fork. And then we were able to secure another $95,000 in VOCA funding for a new forensic interview position. And again, we'll kind of get to why that is really critical right now for us. And so we also wanted to increase, you know, how many children were getting screened as they came to the center. Though this wasn't funded, you know, last year, we have been tracking this, and we were still able to increase this amount. Unfortunately, though, we still don't have a Spanish speaker to implement those. So kind of looking at a breakdown of that data. Again, so we had 442 children screened. And that's initial and follow-up. So this is looking at just initial. Initially, 206 when they came into the center. Unfortunately, what we found was that 52% of them had high symptoms of trauma, meaning that there is a lot going on in their life that is causing problems for them. Things like they can't sleep, because of nightmares, or other things like, any kind of behavioral, high stress, high anxiety, any of those kind of things. Very unfortunately, 46% of those children screened there was a concern for suicide. So we work very closely with Wasatch Behavioral. That's their name. And we make sure to get them referred right away into treatment with them once we identify that. Any questions on that? I know, unfortunately, it's a very sobering number. But we do know that that is a problem in not just our community, in our state. Tracking the child victim cases through the criminal justice system. We do track 100% of Utah County cases. And each month we do individual case staffings of 30 to 50 children, whoever had disclosed in their interview from the previous month, with, 40 of our multidisciplinary team members. So that, includes law enforcement, the prosecutor's office, the juvenile justice system, caseworkers from Division of Child and Family Services, therapists, medical, again, just making sure that each cases are treated in their own uniqueness and looking at, what they need individually.
So do you have a sense for prosecution and outcomes on that side?
We do track that, yes. So we track through Spillman. We've been given permission from the chiefs to just do like case status updates from Spillman. We track through Division of Child and Family Services, and then we do track through the criminal justice system. And I think I've talked with you about this before, Tanner, that we still are just seeing about 25% of the cases that come through actually get that far where they're going to prosecute the case.
And I think one of the reasons that we included this as an outcome is what's hard is that, you know, sometimes we all be careful with outcomes, right? Because notice the sheriff's department does not have number of arrests or number of daily arrests as their outcome. Mm-hmm. That creates the wrong incentives.
Right.
Right. Likewise, we know your organization and you as a leader are very community minded. You're not, you're focused on the kids and you're not necessarily, and it's not your job to prosecute, but it is your job to help facilitate and create an environment that helps build a case.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this is out of your hands. So I'm glad that you even are tracking this as an outcome. We had that conversation, mm-hmm. but I'm curious. So do you feel like more should be? Like, how has this helped to track this for you? Does it help you identify areas where maybe you could provide more and get the training such so that, and obviously perfect is not 100%, right? You're going
right.
to get, I know you have a lot of complicated cases.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But, or do you place some blame on, are you still hoping to see more out of prosecutors? Or how do you see this 25%? Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? What can you do?
You know, and the 25% is pretty typical statewide.
Okay.
When I've talked to other children's justice centers. So that's not unique to us. Of course, you know, I think everyone would like to see that number go up. I think what we're doing is we are facilitating this case review once a month where we have the opportunity to look at these cases and say, like, you know, prosecutors will come in and say, law enforcement, we need you guys to collect this and this and this before you send it over to us. You know, like, this is what's going to help us prosecute the cases. So we're facilitating a space where those relationships are built and where that communication can take place.
Well, it sounds like that too. So, and just by holding the meeting, that's how right. you feel like you're going to help
yes.
push
yeah.
that forward.
Yes.
Is you are following up on the cases that you know have a chance to be prosecuted and making sure that those multidisciplinary teams
exactly.
are moving forward.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I'm going to give Rebecca a little bit of a break. So, of course, the Children's Justice Center has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. As Rebecca mentioned, the state funding was retracted in the COVID-19 legislative session, so that was a big impact for us. But we were not the only ones that had funding cut. The Division of Child and Family Services also had $600,000 cut from their funding, and that meant that they would have to get rid of 13 positions. And in order to save those 13 positions, there was a change that was made to the statute, statute 62A-4A-409. And that was that the division is not required to conduct an investigation under subsection 1A if the division determines the person responsible for the child's care is not the alleged perpetrator and is willing and able to ensure the alleged perpetrator does not have access to the child. That statute change impacted a lot of our cases. It's unclear how many exactly yet. Estimates are anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 statewide, which could be 250 to 500 cases for us. So what this means is that law enforcement typically had the assistance of the Division of Child and Family Services. They had the assistance of a caseworker in coordinating with the family and completing the investigation and completing the forensic interview. Now that they will not be handling these no access perpetrator cases, law enforcement will have to take those on themselves. And so we're looking at how the CJC can step in and fill in for what the caseworkers used to do on these cases. So we're trying to find solutions of how we can support our law enforcement, which is why we anticipate we'll be working a lot more closely with them in you know, as we receive these referrals, we'll be following up with law enforcement on which cases they will be investigating. We'll be assisting in setting up those interviews. Because best practice for forensic interviews is to have one person interviewing and one observing, they used to work when there was a caseworker. They were usually the ones interviewing. The detectives would observe and take notes that they need for their investigation. Now that may not be the case, and so if they don't have enough detectives that can assist in those interviews, our forensic interviewers will be taking on more of that as well and providing more resources.
I just want to interject here. So we went and we met with the chiefs about this legislative change. And just some of the comments that the chiefs gave was, this is putting us back 30 years where it's only relying on law enforcement to investigate these cases instead of a joint team approach. And, you know, some of them were saying, like, we really need to have forensic interviewers that are female or that we have both sex available because we like to give the children a choice of who they talk to. And as you guys can imagine, depending on the gender of their perpetrator, they might feel more comfortable with one gender or the other. Mm-hmm. So I know that the chiefs and the sheriff's associations are working on trying to get this funding restored. But, you know, Division of Child and Family Services is really saying, like, this isn't our role. We're just going to assume that parents are protective. And, you know, in the scheme of all they need to do, right, which is, like, protecting children who are being neglected and abused by their caregivers, that these cases, you know, they really can't take this on anymore. So there's some discussions about putting that funding into the Children's Justice Centers to fund forensic interviewers so that we can assist law enforcement in that way. But, you know, this is all very new. In fact, this just went into effect last week. So we still don't really know what the fallout of this is going to be, but it's very concerning for us. As soon as we heard it, that was the VOCA grant funding we got to hire more forensic interviewers. But that was only one time, 1 year funding that they gave us. So that's why part of our request is for the other 6 months for that forensic interview position. Just to kind of explain
all that. Perfect. Thank you. So yes, we're anticipating that the Children's Justice Centers are going to need to step in more. We will be assisting law enforcement more with their investigation through the forensic interviewers, and we will also be providing even more resources to families. I mean, that has always been a policy of ours to, you know, we always help these families and meet with them to provide resources. But there are some situations where we will be their first point of contact. In fact, on cases where the offender is a juvenile under the age of 12, law enforcement typically did not investigate those cases. And so we're anticipating that we will be maybe having a part in those cases more than before. And so even just last week, right after this change was implemented, we had a parent contacting us to look for resources and to get assistance. So we're expecting that this will really come down on us and we will need to take on more with these families. Did you have anything else? Okay. So additional challenges that we had, our Friends Board was limited on fundraising this year. It has been very difficult not to hold in-person fundraising events. We tried doing a virtual one. We actually had to extend it to the end of the year because it was not as successful as years past. Right now, we're about $5,000 that they have been able to raise so far. And then because of social distancing, especially as, you know, the beginning of the pandemic when everyone was quarantining, even though we did continue to provide the services, we had to limit the number of families that came into the center. So typically we could have, you know, two families at a time and two interviews going on at a time, but that had to be limited to one, and staff had to be limited on site as well, which made it difficult to coordinate some of those resources. We were unable to recruit, train, and retain volunteers during this time. Those volunteers are so impactful to the children and the families that we serve, and so that was also limited. We didn't have the on-site treatment available. That was the groups, the support groups, and the on-site therapy. And there was also a decline in reported child abuse cases. And I want to go a little bit further into that. I'm sure this is common knowledge that as these children were home, away from school, away from coaches, away from other trusted adults, and isolated, they were often more isolated. Many of them might be isolated with their abusers. And so it was difficult for them to come forward and to seek help. And we really don't know the impact yet that COVID-19 and the isolation of these children has had on abuse. I don't think we'll know the full extent of it for maybe even years to come. And this is not just here in our community, not just in our state, but nationwide, there has been a decrease in child abuse cases being reported because these children, these child victims, are isolated and away from adults that could help them or talk to them. So that is a concern, and we're expecting, like I said, that we're going to be seeing this, especially since a lot of kids do delay in reporting. We may not see the full extent of it for a long time. Any questions about the challenges? So we did have successes this year, too. Let's be positive, too. So we were able to remain open, as I mentioned. So there were just modifications to the services provided, but we, you know, that's not an option for us to shut down. We had to continue to provide those services. Through the Friends Board, we were able to get new roofing and flooring installed in the Provo building. In June, the Children's Justice Center in North County was open. We are currently in a temporary location, but we're looking to become a permanent part of the community. We received so much support from our community as well. We had lots of donations of face masks, cleaning supplies, activity kits, since we had to put the toys away, so we needed something to entertain the kids. We also transitioned to fully providing telemental health services, treatment services, and we secured an additional $240,000 through grant funding. Mm-hmm. All right. So these are our 2021 outcomes metrics. So our plan is to reduce the number of underserved child abuse victims and their families in North County as we continue to provide those services in that area and be more accessible to those families. Increase the percentage of services to reported child abuse victims in North County. Increase the North County funding by 25% through grants. I will be doing a lot of grant writing this year. Provide forensic interview services for 250 child victims that are no longer investigated under state statute through the Division of Child and Family Services. So again, providing services to those children affected by the statute change. And then track 100% of child victim cases through the criminal justice system. Okay.
You're here. Okay, so let's talk funding. You guys should have all received a copy of this in our budget packet that we turned in. But I think probably this data is a little more telling. As you guys I'm sure are aware that under state statute, it does describe Children's Justice Center's appropriation and funding. So I just included the code there. But what it says is funding for the centers under this section is intended to be broad-based, provided by a line item appropriation by the legislature to the Attorney General's office, and is intended to include federal grant money. So we have the state already, state, federal grant money, local government money, and private donations. And so that's why you can see on the right here that I broke it down by state, federal, local, and private. And then other private is more like in-kind. So the comfort items that we talked about, the activity kits, we were almost $50,000. And this is a conservative, figure for the amount of items that our community donates for these kids, like snacks and those activity kits, blankets, This doesn't even include the handmade teddy bears that are made for every child. Actually, we should probably start counting that. And then volunteer hours that are spent devoted to our center and to these kids. On the left, you'll see that, you know, our, and again, it's kind of tricky because you're asking me for a calendar year, and most of my other funding sources run on, you know, the fiscal year. So that's why, you know, I anticipate that we will get at least 150 back from the state because of the 300,000, 150 was ongoing and 150 was going to be one-time funding to help open the North County Center. So of course we will ask for the 300,000, but conservatively I figured that we should get at least 75 again for half a year of 2021. And that's kind of the breakdown of everything else. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. So our requests for this year, and again, I hope you guys know, like, that we are always exploring every other funding option, and so we come to you with those things that we cannot get funded anywhere else. So as far as the associate director position over North County, now I did request the full amount for salary and benefits, and, you know, I do plan on asking the state to pay for the last 6 months. So what we could do is, you know, what we did this year, if you guys were interested in, you know, putting half of it in reserves in case that money doesn't come through, but we do not have anything to cover the first 6 months of 2021. The forensic interview position, I would also be open to keeping that in reserve. There's one more funding source, like I said, that VOCA has covered it until June of 2021. So this is a figure for 6 months of 2021, the 32,821. But I do want to explore one other funding source that could potentially fund it for 1 year. So that could get us to the next year. So I would be open to that being in reserve and then released if we cannot get that one other funding source. And then the last request is for building maintenance for North County CJC. And, you know, I would really want to explore like a similar situation that we have with Provo with the county, where the Friends own the property but then lease it to the county for $1 a year, and with the county providing insurance for that building and maintenance of the building. Now, you know, big maintenance costs like equipment, the Friends would still cover, but really this is covering the cost of labor for public works to just maintain the building.
How does that work? Because right now the Friends is not owned. You don't have an owned site. Right.
So through, I'm sure you guys are aware, through the CARES money, the Friends were able to get $360,000 towards a building and then another $200,000 through community development block grants. And so we're very close to going under contract with a house in American Fork. So we're hoping, I mean, that purchase has to be made by the end of this year. So we will be in a home by the end of the year, but it is probably going to take some time to renovate it to what we need exactly and raise money to renovate.
Okay. I wonder how that works in terms of, as you get further away from this campus, you know, we'd have to ask our public works. I wonder about having that maintenance.
I have asked them.
You okay?
And yes. And they said that they really go all over the county to maintain county properties so that it wouldn't be a big deal. But, I mean, yes, we could, definitely would need to have, you know, those conversations. Okay. Any other questions on that? I really try to be conservative with, you know, the requests that we give you guys then, you know, the community gains a lot with the amount you guys invest.
And so, and these positions you're requesting, they're not new positions, obviously.
No.
They're position, but you have them on as your new request just because they were essentially funded with one-time money during 2020?
Right. Well, and, you know, when we had talked about this position, that we would go through the same process, that I would try and get other funding for it.
Sure.
But yes, they are just to fund what's
what's already there.
It's already there.
And so that's, yeah, I just wanted to point that out, because if you were to look at the way your request is written compared to the way other departments,
okay,
it would look like you're actually asking for new positions.
Okay.
And you're not.
Right.
It's just, you got to find a way to, you still have a budget gap to pay for these existing positions.
Yes.
Because last year, either through one-time general fund appropriations or one-time grants from the state, that's how you paid for it.
Yes.
And you got to make sure you still can pay for it going forward.
Right.
But the like you said, the request was that you try to find ways to fund it, which you thought you probably could do.
Well, for the associate director, I think I can find a way to fund half of it, but not, like I said, not from January to the end of June.
Right.
I have no other way of funding that position.
Because that was our conversation last year, was that obviously last year's, I mean, 2020 is a whole different year.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on, so
yes,
it's kind of hard to predict, but that was our conversation last year, that would work through this year, finding funding mechanisms to support that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Other than from the county.
Right. Yes. And I have explored, you know, every other option that I could. The problem is that a lot of grants only fund direct services. They don't fund administration.
Right.
So that's why we're really looking to those, hopefully procuring those state funds. But that won't start till July.
Right. Okay.
We appreciate you guys hanging in here with us. I promise we're getting to the end. So just on top of the metrics that that we'll be tracking for the county, we just wanted to make you guys aware of some other goals that we have this year that we're hoping to accomplish. And you know, I mentioned already renovating and relocating to a permanent North County Children's Justice Center location. We're currently working with all of our supervisors to implement a peer review process to make sure that data is being put in correctly, accurately, consistently, and, you know, in accordance with all of our policies and procedures. We have been, and we were going to continue to do quarterly staff trainings to improve retention and morale and hopefully, you know, increase productivity. And we're also working with our supervisors for each of the programs to come up with ways where they can do more community outreach and educate the community a little bit more about what we do, about reporting laws, things like that. And also implementing an internal process to support our multidisciplinary team. Again, with this legislative change that's happening, we'll be exploring and are already having lots of conversations with law enforcement on how we can support them. Hey, any questions on those?
Maybe just for my own clarification. So this position that we're talking about, if it's when the state money comes in, is the state money going to continue to come in to support this position throughout, you know, into the years to come? So the gap is just that first 6 months only, and then after that, the state will fund that position?
That is my hope right now. But it depends on how much that ongoing money is. You know, so I'm anticipating it's going to be $150,000. It might end up being that we need some of that funding to pay for overhead costs, like electricity, you know, things like that in the North County building.
Okay.
It depends.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to talk about feedback that we get from the parents and the children.
Okay, so after a family comes to our center, the parents are given the opportunity to give us their feedback. And this is so important to us. We want to make sure that we are providing the services and resources that they need. So their feedback is important. So we do that after the initial appointment. Then we do a 2-month follow-up call and offer that same survey in that phone call. We average each quarter 40 of those initial surveys and 40 follow-up surveys. And each of our centers are collecting their own results so we can see how each center is doing individually. So we wanted to share some of that feedback that we have received this year. Things like, I believe my child felt safe at the center. 85% agreed with that. I was given information about the services and programs. 97% agreed. They felt that our staff were friendly and pleasant. They appreciated that they were treated with kindness, that their child felt safe. Some of them, you know, these parents sometimes beat themselves up, and somebody really appreciated that they didn't feel blamed or attacked, that their parenting was actually complimented and that they were reassured. And that can mean a lot to these parents during this difficult time. The building was comfortable, of course. We want that comfortable, home-like environment, that our staff was approachable. They made it easy to ask those hard questions. These are very hard conversations that they're having, and it's a very neutral environment. Of course, we want to know if there's things that we can improve. So being greeted upon entry to make sure that they were in the right area. We don't have a receptionist, so sometimes that can be a little tricky to make sure we hear people come in. And so, for example, in North County, we've implemented a bell chime so we know when people come into the center. More on-site therapy options, more parking available. Parking's always a comment that comes up. And then on-site attorneys to ask questions. And then, oh, I got to put you in. Now, we also wanted to share the feedback from the children. We also asked them to share their feedback because their feedback is the most important of all. And so this is our, imagine that there's music going along with this. We provide these forms for the children to fill out after their visit if they would like to. Yes, make sure you can see it. So things like, you help me by keeping me safe. They appreciate the snacks. What kid doesn't?
Who doesn't, right?
Right? Exactly. The environment is comforting. A good and friendly place. Staff is genuine and helpful. They can work towards the path of healing. Feel safe and feel protected. I love that this girl mentions feeling comfortable. That's really what we strive to provide. This boy says, I feel a lot better, not as scared. This is what we strive to give to the community and to these child victims.
We put this video on Facebook, and so we're hoping to get, you know, some traction on some community education on how to report and volunteer opportunities that are available. Any questions for us?
Thank you.
So just a couple, I'd like to sit down and go through some of these statute changes in more detail to understand how that's impacting your operations. Mm-hmm. One bit of feedback, this is great. This is exactly what we were hoping for. It's an overview. This is kind of standard feedback that we've been giving to all of the departments is you're doing a great job of tracking and reporting on your outcomes, But I think it would be a lot more meaningful if you could try to find outcomes that you'll actually measure. And measure it in a way, you do measure it here. Like you have a number on your, you know, that one we were talking about, Provost Center and the Provost Center in North County. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be helpful if you were to, before the end of the year, pick a number that's your target. So then you can, rather than just giving yourself so much wiggle room, which I realize there's so much qualitative aspects to your outcomes, mm-hmm. but at least some of them should have, pick a target number for your metric, and then you can report on how you did. You see what I'm saying there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's hard. It pushes you, because I know there's a natural inclination from every department to say, well, but there's this variable and there's this variable and we don't really have it. And so, and we acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But I think if you really push yourself to find, you're going to find there's at least a couple metrics that you can just target. And whether you hit it or you exceed it or you don't quite achieve it, I still think it's helpful to have those quantitative targets.
Okay. Sounds good.
But thank you for this report and for all the great work you do in the community.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you. Nope, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for your support. Honestly, we know that you guys care about this cause and are very supportive of the work that we do. So thank you.
Okay. And we will go ahead and adjourn until 1 p.m. Mm-hmm.